Okay, so yesterday, in the afternoon, we have two talks on dynamical systems, and this is also a talk on dynamical systems. And in this talk, we are interested in algorithms, rigorous algorithms, to prove some dynamical properties like uniform hypervariety or the existence of the subsystem finite type. So my talk is divided in two parts, and in the first part, we are interested in proving. Given a dynamical system, we want to prove the uniform hypervariety. The uniform hypervariety is a very nice property. That's, so basically, we are happy if our dynamics is uniformly hyperbolic, but it's difficult to prove the uniform hypervariety. So we introduce a weaker notion of hypervariety called the quasi-hypervariety, which implies the uniform hypervariety with the assumption of chain recurrence. And so in this first part, I want to describe how to prove the uniform hypervariety. And in the second part is a kind of application of the first part. And in this part, so in the first part, we prove the uniform hypervariety of dynamical systems. And if the dynamics is uniformly hyperbolic, then there should be a partition of the phase space that gives us symbolic coding. And so this is what we want to do. So in the second part, we in some systematic way, we construct a symbolic partition of the phase space that gives a conjugacy between the invariant set of our interest and the subsystem of finite type. So here we introduce monodromy, which comes from the study of the complex dynamical systems, and the notion of pruning front, which is a generalization of the kneading sequences in one-dimensional dynamical systems to higher-dimensional systems. So this is this comes from the complex dynamics, and this comes from the real dynamical systems. And the key point is that there should be a strong relation between this complex notion and the real notion. And so this is the plan for my talk. Okay, so let me get into the first part. So we begin with recalling the definition of the uniform hypervariety of dynamical systems. So in this talk, we only consider the diffeomorphisms, dynamical systems given by diffeomorphisms. That is, given a point x in a manifold M, so we think that this point is get mapped to fx in after 1 second. Then maybe in another second, so this point fx is mapped to f and f of x. So this produces produce orbits of for each point, and so this is our dynamical systems. So F is a map diffeomorphism from M to M. Okay, and we are interested in the dynamical behavior of F on a compact invariant set lambda, which means that F of lambda is lambda itself, and so we denote by T lambda the restriction of the tangent bundle Tm over lambda. So here we recall the notion of uniform hyperbolicity. So we say that the F is hyperbolic on lambda, or just we say that the lambda is a uniformly hyperbolic set if this tangent bundle splits into a direct sum of ES and EU. These are TF invariant subbundles, and if there exist constant C and lambda such that these inequalities holds on for each vectors in ES and EU. Okay. Roughly, this means that we can decompose every tangent space into expanding direction, that is EU, unstable direction, and stable direction, the contraction direction, that is ES, and we have a exponential growth or decay of the tangent vectors in ES and EU. Okay. So uniform hypervariety is very nice strong property of dynamical systems, which is that if the dynamics F is uniformly hyperbolic, we have with some technical assumption, we have the structural stability of the dynamical systems F. That means that if we perturb the dynamical system slightly, then we still have the same dynamics, topologically the same dynamics even after that small perturbation. So this is a very nice property, and there are lots of studies on how the system behaves under the assumption of uniform hypervelocity. But the problem is that given a dynamical system, given say a polynomial maps or any diffeomorphism, then it's very difficult to prove the uniform hypervelocity. So for example, so we consider the real Hanau map, which was also you know, topic of yesterday's talk by Stefano. So we the Hanau map is a polynomial map defined on the two-dimensional space, which maps x and y to a minus x squared plus by and x. Slightly different parameterization, but the same map with the Stefano's Hanau map. And so the question is, you know, when this map is hyperbolic. So if a is 1.4 and b is 0.3, then so we have the Hanau attractor, that's a kind of strange attractor, which was shown to be topologically mixing up to 10 to the minus 5. Yes, but so for other parameter values, so we have simpler dynamical systems like Smed's horseshoe, and actually in 1970s, Dubeny and Nitescu showed that for any fixed b, actually, if b equals zero, then this dynamics, the Hanau map reduces to one-dimensional quadratic map, so the dynamics is very simple. And for what Dubeny and Nitescu shows is that for any fixed b, if a is sufficiently large, then the non-wandering set of the Hanau map is uniformly hyperbolic, and actually it is a Smed horseshoe. Yes. So this is the picture of parameter space of the Hanau map. So here we have an A axis, and here we have B axis. And if B equals zero, then we have a quadratic map on this line. And so what is the statement? So they claim that if A is sufficiently large, say here, then the map is uniformly hyperbolic, and the dynamics is described by the famous Smed horseshoe, that is a map which maps this square into this horseshoe-like structure. Okay. So this is very nice, but so we are interested in the other part of the parameter space. And so in 90s, Davis and Mackey and Sanami conjectured that the map, Hanau map should be hyperbolic, uniformly hyperbolic for this parameter values, but with different structure of other than the uniform Smed horseshoe. But they conjectured that the map is uniformly hyperbolic, and their observation comes from this numerical picture. This illustrates the number of the periodic points counted by a numerical method called Beham and Wenzel's method. This is not rigorous, but so here the Jacobian B is fixed to minus one, so the map is area preserving. And so here is the A axis, and this is the number of the periodic points up to a period of maybe up to 20 or something like that. Okay, so this numerical computation suggests that the number of periodic point is constant on these plateaus here and here. And this suggests that the map should be some structure stability, and you know, by the structure stability theorem, so this implies that map should be uniformly hyperbolic on this parameter region. But that problem is, you know, proving uniform hyperbolicity for these parameter values is very difficult. So in this result, so they construct, you know, the partition of the phase space and the partition of the tangent space used by hand. But you cannot do that by hand for these parameter values. So we introduce some computational method for proving the structural stability and the uniform hypervelocity of given dynamical systems. And actually, so with this algorithm, we can prove the following. So if A and B is chosen from the red region, then the chain recurrence set of the Hanau map is uniformly hyperbolic. So there are lots of regions on which the map is uniformly hyperbolic. So for example, so here is a map is uniformly hyperbolic. So this means that there is no bifurcation in the chain recurrence set. And so since the Dubenian and Nitet shows that MAP is uniformly hyperbolic and smells Hochschild on this parameter regions, so this implies that on you know whole of this big island, so the MAP is this one, smells Hochschild. And we can also show that there is nothing left in the phase space on this region, and so there is only one saddle point, and one saddle and one sink, and so there is a pure doubling. And so for the other part, say here and here, so we have interesting hyperbolic chaotic dynamical systems, which is different from this uniformly hyperbolic smelled horseshoe.
Can you identify the boundaries of the different domains?
We can do that numerically. So numerically, so there all most of you know these boundaries are the yes, right, homoclinic and heteroclinic tangencies.
So
yes.
How do you know that these are actually completely till then? I mean, you can prove what you just
yeah.
If
so
you want the boundary, you have to really.
So instead of you know computing the verifying a uniform hyperbolicity for a single parameter value, do we use the cubes in the parameter space.
So
yes, right. So, yes, right. So you are interested in the classical parameter value? Mackay's point is here. So it's red. So we, in some sense, we justify the observation. Yes. Yeah, and the strange attractor of the classical parameter value is around 1.4, and is here. So we don't know if it's you know hyperbolic. Certainly, it's not hyperbolic, but we have no you know. According to Stefano, we cannot it's impossible to determine. Yes. Yes, the biggest one appears in the picture. Yes, two more. Yes, right. So, if we restrict the computation to this parameter region, so we can prove the actually I have proved the uniform hyperbolicity for these small regions.
Yeah.
Yes, right. And I found lots of small regions here and here and here. But so, this is you know different computation. Because so for this computation, so I search all of the you know phase space, parameter space, so that takes a lot of time for.
But they're not colored red.
So there should be more and more. Red, yes.
Minus 1 line here only has red in the first entire.
This one is here.
It's a rough.
Yes, rough.
It's rough. It's that state of the last pixel. It's
yes.
The smaller and smaller domain you can
right.
Follow.
So, yes. Actually, so if I have a more powerful and fast computer, then so there should be more red regions, but that should not fill the you know whole of the parameter region because there should be a Newhouse phenomena or something like that. But you know what I expect is there should be a you know the most of the well I don't know the percentage, but well there should be more and more structurally stable parameter regions. Okay, so, so now I want to describe how to construct an algorithm to, you know, proving this kind of statement. So, the difficulty of the you know, proving uniform hyperbolicity comes from, you know, the fact that the constructing splitting of tangent space according to the hyperbolic splitting is very difficult. So, we want to avoid constructing such a nice metric in tangent space. So we introduce this weaker notion of hyperbolicity called quasi-hyperbolicity. So we say that F is quasi-hyperbolic on lambda if this dynamics, this is a tangent map, tangent differential of F, TF that acts on T lambda has no non-trivial bounded orbit. Well, here, I mean by trivial bounded orbit that, you know, the orbit of zero vector. Zero vector should be mapped to another zero vector. But so here I mean that you know if we take a non-zero vector, any non-zero vector, then this vector should diverge to infinity. I mean this should grow by iterating forward or backward. Okay, so this vector should grow by iterating forward or backward. And it's easy to see that uniform hyperplicity implies quasi hyperplicity. Because if we have yes.
Because we have to grow at an exponential rate.
Right. But anyway, so it we say that it's quasi hyperplicity if every orbit is not bounded in the tangent space. Okay, make sense? Well, so this implication is very easy because if we have a hyperbolic splitting in the tangent space, then so every orbit must have unstable or stable components. Then if the orbit is unstable, has unstable components, then it should grow by taking forward. And if this vector is on the stable direction, then it should grow by taking backwards. So there is no non-trivial bounded orbits, and the quasi hyperplicity follows. But and also we can show that if the map is quasi hyperbolic, then so the hyperplicity of periodic orbits follows because if there is a eigenvalues that rise on the modulus one, then so there should be a bounded non-trivial orbits with respect to this map, and so the non-existence of the tangent also follows because if we have this kind of picture, so we have a saddle point, unstable and stable direction, and if we have a homoclinic tangent like this, then we choose a vector here, like this. So since this vector is on the stable direction of this point, say a P, then so the forward image of this red vector shrinks like this. And the backward image of this vector also shrinks because it is on the unstable manifold of this point. So the orbit of the red vector corresponds to a non-trivial bounded orbit. So this means that the existence of tangencies violates the quasi-hyperbolicity. So quasi-hyperbolicity is very close to the uniform hyperbolicity, but actually, quasi-hyperbolicity is weaker than uniform hyperbolicity because the dimension of the unstable direction may vary on the quasi-hyperbolic invariant set like this. So our set lambda is defined to be the union of P and Q. P is a saddle of index 1 and Q is a saddle of index 2 in the three-dimensional dynamical systems. And we have this kind of intersection. Then so this dynamic lambda is the union of this point and the connecting orbits between them. Then so the dynamics is quasi hyperbolic, but it's not uniformly hyperbolic apparently because there are saddles of different indices. So quasi hyperbolicity is weaker than uniform hyperbolicity, but there is a nice theorem by classical theorem by these people, which say that and if the dynamics is chain recurrent, that is the chain recurrent set of the dynamics restricted to lambda is equals itself, so we lose nothing here, then F is uniformly hyperbolic on lambda, if and only if F is quasi hyperbolic on lambda. So in this category of dynamical systems, then we have we know that the uniform hyperbolicity and quasi hyperbolicity coincide. So here I want to remark that the chain recurrent set is always chain recurrent. So this may seem trivial, but this implies that in the chain recurrent set of the dynamics restricted to the chain recurrent set is chain recurrent set of the original dynamics. So this was this is the theorem by Conley, and so this is why we can apply our method of proving quasi hyperbolicity for the case of the chain recurrent set of the Hennon map, because so this means that to prove the uniform hyperbolicity of the chain recurrent set of given dynamical systems, it suffices to show that it is quasi hyperbolic.
Yes.
Chain recurrence?
Yeah.
The definition of chain recurrence?
Yeah.
Yes. So dynamics is changed. So first we need to define the epsilon should orbit. So orbit at the point, say x0 and x1 and x2, the sequence of points is changed. Epsilon should orbit, field orbit. If so, so we assume the existence of some metric and f of x I, and the distance of f of x I and x I plus 1 is always less than epsilon. So we allow the error of the radius epsilon, and we say that the point x is change current if for any epsilon zero. So there should be epsilon. From x to x. This means that x is chain recurrent, and this implies that we can always find that this kind of epsilon should orbit inside this set. Okay. This assumption is somehow difficult to prove, but so thanks to this nice theorem by Conley, so we can always apply our algorithm to the if the inverse set of our interest is the chain recurrent set of the dynamical system. Okay. So now we want to further rephrase the definition of quasi hypervelocity so that it is more tractable, more easy to prove using computers. So this is a simple observation. Lambda is quasi hyperbolic if and only if the zero section of this tangent boundary is isolated with respect to the differential of the original minor dynamics F. So, this reaction is very easy. So, if lambda is quasi-hyperbolic, then there should be no non-trivial bounded orbit, so zero section is isolated. And this implication is also easy, because if there is a bounded orbit of this size, say, if this vector corresponds to a bounded orbit of with respect to TF, then the half of this vector also should be the bounded orbit of the dynamics TF, because the dynamics TF is linear on in its fiber direction. So this means that if there exists a red vector, so this a non-trivial bounded orbit, there should be a bunch of vectors that shrinks to the zero section of the this tangent boundary, and this implies that zero section is not isolated. So these are the same statement. Okay. And we can also rephrase this like this. So if there is an isolating neighborhood is defined here. So a compact set N is an isolating neighborhood if its maximal invariant set is contained in the interior. Okay. So if there is an isolating neighborhood that contains the zero section of this tangent vector, this automatically holds that the section is the isolated. There should be no other invariant set inside of this isolated neighborhood. So to prove the uniform hypervelocity of chain recurrent set, it's sufficient to show that there exists an isolated neighborhood that contains the section of the tangent bundle. Okay. So basic strategy of our algorithm is as follows. So we first find the nice compact neighborhood K of the chain recurrent set. So we want to enclose the chain recurrent set rigorously. And now we construct a neighborhood N, the candidate for the isolated neighborhood of the zero section. And now we compute the invariance part of this neighborhood N. And if the invariant part of this neighborhood is contained in this interior, then we are done, because we know that if this set N intersects with this chain recurrent set, is the isolated neighborhood we wanted. So what we want to do is prove this kind of statement using computers. So here we introduce the interval arithmetic. Maybe I need to be a little bit quick here. Okay, so what we do here is we want to compute the image of this kind of box in the field space. But this cannot be possible because there should be errors in the computers. So instead of computing the exact image fx, we enclose this by using intervals y1 and y2. So this is the idea of the outer approximation of the dynamical systems using interval arithmetic. So what we do is like this. So we construct a directed graph, df, which imitates the behavior of f, like this. So we subdivide the phase space into smaller cubes. And so we want to compute the image of this cube like this. But this is not possible. So instead we compute the this kind of intervals, this kind of square that rigorously enclose the actual image. And now So we need to take our four-dimensional space. Phase space is two-dimensional and the tangent. Yes. Actually, it's unfortunately I cannot draw a four-dimensional cube here. So. Yes. Right. Yeah. So anyway. So. Yeah, this is basically the same as, you know, the construction given by Stefano yesterday. And so basically we make a directed graph that imitates the, you know, actual behavior of F. So this point, this vertices is mapped to these eight, the union of these eight vertices. And using this graph, we can enclose the dynamical objects of our interest like this. So this is a simple theorem. So the set of periodic points of F is contained in the cubes corresponding to cycles of the graph GF. This is because if there is a actual periodic point, there should be an edge in directed graph GF that imitates the behavior of the point X. So this implies that this point X should be contained in some cycles in graph GF because we have the rigorous inclusion property of the true image in the kind of squares. Okay, and we can also enclose the such kind of invariant set. And invariant set of F is contained in the invariant part of the graph. And change kind of set. So this is what we want to compute. But usually, so this is a fractal object, and we cannot compute this change current set rigorously, but we can enclose this change current set using this graph GF like this. The SCC of graph GF is the set of vertices that correspond to some cycles in the graph. And if we take all of the cycles, then the union of the cubes corresponding to cycles of GF should contain the actual change current set. This is not hard to prove. Okay, so using these techniques, so we can actually construct an algorithm that completes the proof of the hyperbolicity like this. So we find the K, compact set K, such that the change current set is contained in the interior of K. So in the case of a Hennel map, we can take a square of the radius 8 or something like that. So because we a priori know then how the dynamics behaves outside this square. So we can take some set K that encloses the change current set. Now we compute the SCC of this graph GF and replace K with it so that we have a better approximation of the change current set. Now we compute the invariant part of the dynamics that acts on the tangent bundle. And now replace this neighborhood with this set. And if this inclusion property holds, then we stop this algorithm. Else, so if this inclusion phase. Then we subdivide the cubes in phase space and tangent space so that we can have have more better approximation of the invariant set. Then we'll go back to this. So this means that if this algorithm stops at some point, then the chain recurrence is uniformly hyperbolic. So if, unfortunately, our dynamics is not uniformly hyperbolic, then my poor computer runs forever to prove the uniform hyperbolicity. But, well, actually it stops sometimes out of memory and things like that. Okay, anyway, so this is how to prove the uniform hyperbolicity of given dynamical systems. Identity map is not hyperbolic, right? So then that's forever.
When does it stop?
So zero section is not isolated. Mm-hmm. If the map is the identity, so everything is mapped to itself,
yeah.
And so so we cannot have this inclusion of the invariant set into interior. So this algorithm runs forever.
I mean, that's the point. That the zero section is always invariant.
Right.
How do you know? So there always is an invariant set, and this must be some finite level approximation. I don't know what it means for the algorithm to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain it again?
Ah, yes. So, well, this algorithm stops if this property holds, and this means that Well, we subdivide this. Say our dynamics is one dimensional. Well,
this small n.
Small n.
Yeah.
N is the dimension of the phase space. So yes, right. So yeah, this is our phase space M, and this is the tangent space T x of M. Well, then, so what we want to prove is that we first take a neighborhood of, well, this is zero section. Well, and what we want to do is isolate this one, and so we subdivide like this. And if we know that the actual invariant set is something like this, contained in like this, in the set, then we know that this N is an isolating neighborhood. So then this algorithm stops. And if, unfortunately, we cannot prove this kind of property, say our invariant set is like this, that is, that hits the boundary of the neighborhood N, so this is N, then we subdivide every curve like this, hoping that we, in the next step, we have a better approximation of the true invariant sets, and we have something like this. So if the map is not uniformly hyperbolic, there should be a actual orbit that touch the boundary of this set N. Then so this computation should not finish. Okay. So this is the first part. So using this algorithm, we can obtain a picture in the parameter space, which guarantees that at some parameter regions, the map is uniformly hyperbolic. And in the next part, so we want to discuss how a host is created. And so we are interested in how to describe the dynamics in the phase space. Okay, so here is again the picture of the phase space of the Hennel map with color. Color means that the topological entropy of the Hennel map, which is computed by Rafael Frongier, who used my computation and also used the Conley index to compute the rigorous lower bound of the topological entropy of the Hennel map. So on this big region, so the Hennel map is free horseshoe. So we have the topological entropy 0.996. This is not actually 0.96 something. This is log 2. And here we have zero topological entropy on these blue regions. And so we see is that what we see is that, you know, on this region, so we have a non-chaotic dynamics, and on this big island, we have free chaotic dynamical systems like Smale's horseshoe. And the problem is, so we have horseshoe here, and we have empty set here. And so we also have a kneading theory which describes how a horseshoe is created in one-dimensional setting. And so we are interested in the other part. That is, so we are interested how a horseshoe is created, if we choose the parameter values here or here. So unfortunately, we have nothing like a kneading theory in the Hennon map, in the case of Hennon map, because there is no critical point in this case. Hennon map is a diffeomorphism, and so, well, so I'm sorry, so this is not, yes. So there is an idea of, you know, describing how a horseshoe is created. That is, the original idea was given by Shibitanovich, and so which is called the pruning front theory. And so this is that, you know, for this, so if our dynamics is Smale horseshoe like this, so then every orbit in this horseshoe should correspond to a point in the symbolic plane. So what is the symbolic plane? So if we subdivide in the phase space, say here we have zero symbol and here we have one symbol, then every orbit is assigned a sequence of 0 and 1. Say if we our point is here, then so this point should have the symbolic sequence like 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, because this is a fixed point. So if we our point is choose something here, then this point is point of PL2, then this point should have a symbolic sequence like 0, 1, and 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. Something like this, so, and we can locate each orbit into this kind of symbolic plane. So this means that, you know, this square is subdivided into 0 and 1, and in the next level, so we have a subdivision like this, 0, 0, and 1, 1, and 0, 1, and 1, 0, and furthermore. Okay, so in this way, so every, you know, this square corresponds to this small square here, and this 0, 1, 1, 0 corresponds to this region of the phase space. And in this way, so every orbit is corresponds to a point in a symbolic plane. And in the case of a full horseshoe, so there is nothing forbidden for the sequence of 0, 0 and 1. But in the case of, you know, hyperbolic set, but not Smale horseshoe, so there should be some region like this which is forbidden for the actual orbit in this dynamical system. So here we miss some intersection of stable and unstable directions. So this is in fact a phase space of the Hennon map at the parameter value which Davis and Makai and Sanami studied. And actually, so here we have no tangences between the unstable and stable manifolds. So the map is uniformly hyperbolic. But this is different from full horseshoe because we miss some intersections. And the idea of pruning front is, you know, to express this kind of missing of intersections using this small squares in the symbolic plane.
Yes.
Yes.
Is there any reason why you can bother saying the plane?
You can also use as, you know, one-dimensional space to express the, you know, the symbolic sequence. But it, you know, in this kind of, you know, expression, so it's more easier to see the, you know, correspondence between actual dynamics and the symbolic strain.
Because there's many sequences on both sides. The time
right.
Is the sequence. I think each
Jason.
Is the
yes.
Positive and negative sequence.
Yeah.
Just like 0, 1, because 0, 1 in the time in phase
yeah.
2. So each point defines the full, the positive infinite sequence and negative infinite sequence. So each point, each
sign three signals behind the point on the plan.
So, for other forbidden, you can move the definite point. And also,
yeah. Yes. So actually, so if this black region is forbidden, then the image forward and backward image of this black region is also should be forbidden like this. Okay. So the Shubitani Beach claims is that the dynamics of the Hennon map can be described as an incomplete horseshoe, which is described in such a way that is given by a pruning front. So this black region is called the pruning region because that is some of the symbolic figures are pruned away. The Shubitani Beach conjecture that Hennon map is always can be understood using this kind of pruning front. But this is too good to be true because there exist counterexamples. Okay. Well, the simple example is that in the case of there is a camtori, and then so this cannot be a subset of the symbolic space. And some difficulty is that there is no canonical definition of the symbolic coding. In the case of smeared horseshoe, it's easy to assign the symbolic sequences because we can assign 0 and 1 like this. But if our dynamics is something like this, then we don't know how to subdivide the phase space into 0 and 1, and so this is a big problem to study the pruning fronts of the Hennon map. But so there are positive results about the pruning front conjecture. So actually, so Davis and Mackay and Sanami constructed nice Markov partition, and so in this case, so we can subdivide the phase space into 0 and 1. So this is easier because the map is more close to the uniformly hyperbolic smeared horseshoe, so that symbolic coding is not so difficult. And in the case of Rossi map, this is a PL analog of Hennon map, and in this case, Yutaka Ishii and Japanese mathematician, he constructed pruning front theory for this Rossi map. And so in this case, pruning front is something like fractal, but anyway, so we can understand the dynamics of the Rossi map as a subset of full horseshoe like this. So we want to develop this kind of theory for the Hennon map, usual Hennon map. And now, this is a real point of view. I mean, the pruning front theory is the problem of real dynamical systems. Now we forget about the pruning front for a moment, and we now introduce complex dynamics. Okay, so let me define the complex quadratic map here. So PC is the map which maps Z to D squared plus C. Here we have the parameter C, but now C is a complex number. And so, yeah. So there is user objects. This is the set called Julia set, field Julia set. So field Julia set KC is defined to be a set of the all of the bounded orbits of the dynamic PC. And so here we have lots of nice pictures of field Julia set. And we are interested in this case. So here we have the field Julia set KC is a Cantor set. And when Julia set is a Cantor set, so this is described by the famous Mandelbrot set. Okay, well, I still have 15 minutes. Okay, so the Mandelbrot set is defined to be the set of the parameter values. Now we this picture is a picture of parameter space. So Mandelbrot set is a set of the parameter values C such that the orbit of zero is the unique critical point of this map. The orbit of zero is bounded, then we say that the parameter C is included in the Mandelbrot set, this black set. And so what's nice with the Mandelbrot set is that there is a dichotomy like this. So if the parameter C is in the Mandelbrot set, the black set, then Julia set, the Z is the boundary of the field Julia set, KC, and JC and JC and KC are connected. And if the parameter value C is outside Mandelbrot space, then the JC and KC are homeomorphic to the, you know, this space. This space is defined to be the, you know, space of symbolic sequences, one-sided symbolic sequences of two symbols. I mean, that, so this is the space of sequences like 01, 10, 10, 11, or something like that. And in this case, the sequence is one-sided. That means that, you know, the beginning point, there is a beginning point, zero, and so the sequence lasts in one side. Okay? And furthermore, we know that the dynamics on this field Julia set is conjugate to the full shift map. That is, you know, a map which maps this symbolic sequence into the left, that is at zero. The image of, so this, here you have a shift map sigma, and the image of this orbit 0, 1, 1, 0, under sigma is, you know, just drop the first letter, and this image is like this, 1, 1, 0, something like this. So this dichotomy means that if the parameter C is outside the Mandelbrot set, we can describe the dynamics on this Julia set completely using, you know, this kind of simple algebraic construction. And now, we want to consider how this symbolic, you know, codings varies if our parameter C goes around the Mandelbrot set. So at the beginning, so our parameter C is here. So this point is outside the Mandelbrot set, this blue set. So this means that, so here we have the picture of the dynamical frame. So our Julia set is a Cantor set. And so actually, so we have a symbolic coding of this Cantor set using one symbol 0 and 1. 0 corresponds to green boxes, and 1 corresponds to this red boxes. So this means that, you know, for each orbit like this, if we, our orbit the X is moves like this, then this point should have a symbolic coding of 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, or something like this. But, so we are interested in how this kind of symbolic coding changes if we, if our parameter value C goes around the Mandelbrot set like this. So this is called the monodromy of the quadratic map. And actually, this animation shows that, you know, after turning around the Mandelbrot set, we should have the same dynamics. Yes, we have the same dynamics here at this point, but you see that all of red and green boxes are extended. At the beginning, so we have green stuff on the left-hand side and the right boxes on the right-hand side. But if we take a, you know, turn, big turn around the Mandelbrot set, then all of red and green boxes are interchanged. So this is a rigorous computation of the covering of the invariant set. So this means that, you know, there are two symbolic encodings at this point. So in the beginning, so this point, say, this point has the symbolic coding like 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0, but at the end of the, you know, this parameter loop, so this point has the, you know, another symbolic coding like 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1. So every digit of, in every digit, 0 and 1 are interchanged. Okay? So this kind of construction is summarized like this. So for every element in the pi 1, the fundamental group of the complement of the Mandelbrot set, we can construct some automorphism of this shift space using, so because at the beginning of the end of this loop, so we have two different symbolic coding, so we can measure the difference of symbolic coding using this homomorphism. Okay? So in this way, so we can assign for every orbit, for every element of the complement, the fundamental group of the complement of the Mandelbrot set, we can assign the automorphism of the, you know, this shift space. And actually, in this case, since the Mandelbrot set is connected, And we can show that pi 1 of this set is just D, and the automorphism of the one-sided shift space is just D2. D2 is, you know, entertaining 0 and 1. So in this case, the, you know, the, this automorphism, monodomy homomorphism, is just a map of D into D2. And the question is, what happens in the case, in the case of the Hellman map? So now we consider the complex Hellman map. So in the case of one-dimensional map, so we have the Mandelbrot set, nice Mandelbrot set. But we, in the case of the complex Hellman map, we have a nasty object like this. Well, this is a numerical picture, but this is, people believe that this is something corresponding to the Mandelbrot set in the one-dimensional setting. So in this case, we parameterize the Hellman map using this form. So in this case, A and C are different from the, you know, former A and B. So I'm sorry about this difference. But so in this case, so we, the parameter A is the Jacobian, and if A is zero, then this complex Hellman map reduces to this usual quadratic map. So if the parameter A is other than zero, then we have a diffeomorphism, and so we now consider, we can consider the, you know, something like a Mandelbrot set. So actually, so
C is complex.
A is also complex. A can be. Yeah, but this is the picture for A equals to 0.1 or something like that. The Jacobian is fixed. And so this is, so since there is no critical point in the Hellman map, so there's no, you know, nice way to compute Mandelbrot set like this. So this is the picture of, this picture is drawn using only the information of the orbit of the critical point. But in this case, we, instead of the critical point of the map itself, we use the, you know, critical points of the, you know, Green function that is determined using a potential theory. And so we expect that this is something corresponding to the usual Mandelbrot set. But you see that, you know, in this case, the Mandelbrot set is connected. But in this case, there should be a lot of you know, small islands here and here and here. I'm sorry. The resolution is not good enough. But so what we expect is that, you know, there is there are non-trivial loops in the hyperbolic horseshoe loci. So this is outside of this black set is corresponding to something like hyperbolic horseshoe locus of the complex Hellman map. And in the case of one-dimensional settings, so there is no non-trivial loops. There's only one big loop. But in the case of the Hellman map, so this is actually the conjecture given by John Hubbard in Cornell, which say that, you know, there should be a lot of interesting non-trivial loops. And actually, he conjectured that, you know, the monodromy homomorphism, yes, can be also defined in the case of the complex Hellman map. And so the monodromy is, in that case, so is defined to be the pi, from the pi 1 of the complement of something like Mandelbrot set, and into the automorphism of the shift space. But in this case, shift space is defined to be, you know, by infinitely long. And in that case, the, you know, the automorphism group is very huge, not like simple like this. And actually, so in the case of the by infinitely long sequences, the automorphism group can contain any finite group and, you know, countably many, you know, direct sum of Z and, yeah, and very, very huge group in that case. So what actually Hubbard conjectured is that, you know, there should be the monodromy homomorphism is surjective in this case. This means that, you know, there are infinitely many different groups in the, you know, complement of the Mandelbrot-like set. And this is what he conjectured, but, you know, yeah, I cannot give the details, but dynamics is more like, you know, attracting periodic orbits, and the outside we have, you know, interesting dynamics. Actually, so here we, what we expect in a dynamical plane is, you know, we have a complex horseshoe. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes, the difference is that there's an open set of points that are bounded or open set, or every point, or almost every point is unbounded or something outside.
Yeah, right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So yes. Does this have to be non-trivial in the complement of the four-dimensional thing, or just in the
spectrum? Right. So, yes, that is actually the problem. So what I can prove is that using my program to prove the uniform hyperbolicity, we can prove that so if A parameter A is fixed to one, then we can prove that the parameter is on these green parameter regions, the map is uniformly hyperbolic, and at this point we have the full horseshoe. So this means that this suggests that this should be a non-trivial loop here. But actually, so actually the parameter space is four-dimensional, so we need to have more computation. Yes? So actually we can show that this is non-trivial in the four-dimensional space as follows. Yeah, like following it. Okay, so now what I claim is that there is a non-trivial loop like this. And actually, so to prove that this this small loop is non-trivial, so we compute the monodromy action. So if we take a big loop, like say in the one-dimensional case, so everything red and everything green are interchanged, like in the animation I showed. Okay. So at the beginning we have a usual horseshoe, and this is x and y and the imaginary part of x. So every green and red orbits are interchanged. So now we are like here. Okay.
So this dynamic is happening in the real
four-dimensional. No. So yeah, at this point we have we have a two-dimensional horseshoe.
Yes,
yeah,
so this is the real map you're looking at.
Yes, but the picture is this picture is for the complex Hadamard map. This is x and y, and this is the imaginary part of.
Oh, that's.
Yes. For example, at this point. So we have nothing on the real plane, but we still have the complex full horseshoe. So this means that the monodromy action is like this. So 0 and 1 are interchanged. But for this small loops, we see a more interesting interchange. Okay. Look at this part. So in this case, only these small boxes are interchanged. Like this. So this implies that the monodromy action of the this small loop is just like this. All of the sequences having 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, and 0, 0, 1, 1, 1 are interchanged. So here we see the difference at the beginning and the end of the loop. And so actually, so this proves that the monodromy action is different from the big loop. So this implies that the small loop is different from the big loop. But what's nice with this observation is that we can use this monodromy information to compute the real dynamics here. Okay, so this is the picture of the parameter C, and here is the real axis, and here is the imaginary axis. So for this parameter values, here and here, we have the, our parameter A and C are real, and so we can consider the real map also. And at the beginning of the loop, so we have the smear horseshoe here. And the problem is what is the real dynamics at this point? And actually, so we can use the some symmetry of the polynomial maps, which say that and prove that the dynamics of real Hadamard map at this parameter value is just the fixed point of this monodromy action. This means that we can compute the real dynamics at this point using the monodromy action. Actually, if the monodromy action of this loop is something like this, then this implies that the real dynamics at this point is given by the this pruning front. This means that every orbit which interchanges the sequences at the beginning and the end of this loop is prohibited as this. And the real parameter values.
Sorry, say that again.
Okay,
why does that give you the pruning?
Yes, so this theorem says that the dynamics out of this point, so this point we have the parameter on the real plane, so we can consider the real NO map like this, okay? And the dynamics, the chain recurrence set of the real dynamics at this point, it conjugates to the fixed point of the model mean action. Model mean action is the map from the shift space to itself, and if a sequence, say 0110 is not changed under the action of model mean, then the orbit corresponding to 0110 should appear here. So using this, we can compute the dynamics at this point using this picture. Okay. So since every sequence of 0010100 and 0011100 here is interchanged, this implies that at this parameter value, so every orbit having 0010100 and 0011100 is prohibited. Okay. So using this, we can compute the dynamics of for several parameter values. Okay, I'm sorry, I spent already my time. Okay, so at this parameter region, so we have the pruning front like this, and at this point we have more sequences are prohibited here, and we see that more sequences are prohibited. Usually, if we forbid did more orbits, then we have less topological entropy. And actually, here we have this kind of pruning front, and here we have this kind of pruning front. And using this kind of subsystem of finite type, we can compute the topological entropy. Actually, so we know the matrix which gives the subsystem finite type here, or here. Many 0 and 1 here, or here. Okay, using these matrices, we can compute the topological, the exact value of the topological entropy, like this. So I can give the algebraic equation which gives these numbers, but it's very nasty. Okay, so this is how to use the model mean theory to determine the subsystem of finite type which appears in the real kernel map. Okay, thank you. That's all.